Alrighty, hey, lady.
Okay, we're rolling.
Yep.
Hey, Gopu.
Hey, Zay.
How's it going?
How are you?
Good. Good. It's I'm very interested in today's topic. I have done.
It'll be one. Why? Why interested?
I've just heard more and more about it, and I guess what I've liked so far from what we've been doing with the recent episodes is like just voluntarily diving into these rabbit holes of like I did not know much about other than like what's advertised, what's on social media, what celebrities saying what about Ozempic specifically. And so I mean it's just been a very large amount of learning for me, which
Indeed,
has been
yeah.
fun. You know, there's it's been a lot, and you know, I think what we can do, I think what really piqued my interest is there's a lot that's known for these GLP-1, the agonists to these receptors for diabetes, and I think that's interesting and fun and complicated, and we can get into it, but like it's touted as now this miracle drug. And I think we just came out of the CBD miracle drug phase. I don't see much going on with that more.
It's more of a snake oil. But you know what? There is a paper that we discussed in the department. It kind of discusses so many other impacts of CBD, not just the, you know, anxiety and all that. I think that's the thing, right? The problem with this GLP-1, CBD, not the problem per se. What they do is one thing, and there are so many other aspects that they could do, right? For example, in GLP-1 agonist, like semaglutide, what is the thing? What is the, I forgot the name.
The semaglutide?
Yeah,
Ozempic?
The name, the company. Ozempic, yes.
Ozempic?
Yes, yes. So we only look at it in a way like how it decreases muscle mass, fat loss, etc. But these molecules, they cross blood-brain barrier, and they have so much effect on the brain too.
Yeah,
what caught my interest the most.
So that's where I kind of went to the deep dive, because
same.
Paralleling it to the CBD thing,
yes,
right? It was something that's been around for a long time, right?
Actually, hasn't been. I don't know.
It has been, right? People have not necessarily used the semaglutides.
What was the previous use of this drug? Like, do you
so
know?
It's always been diabetes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right. So the GLP-1 mechanisms has always been tied to diabetes and appetite suppression, right?
And how did it explode? All if it's been using all this while.
So that's why I'm tying it back to the CBD, is it eventually got FDA approval. Got FDA approval through the diabetes.
Makes sense now.
Right, the insulin regulation and the blood sugar regulation. Once that happened, and this is what happened with CBD. CBD got approved for Dravet syndrome and controlling seizures and epilepsy. It opened the door, not for people to use it necessarily, but for clinicians and physicians to start noticing things about it that were not necessarily what it was prescribed for, right?
Yeah.
And so I think we are in that spot with Ozempic and Wegovy, the semaglutides, whereas like with CBD, like literally like 10 to 5 years ago, like everybody was, it's amazing. It does this. It's inflammation, and it makes you smarter, and it makes you run faster, and it increases your libido, like all this crap, right? And some of it probably is true, but once it hits the market and people can start talking about it, scientists can go back and start verifying and validating and defining these mechanisms. We are starting to uncover a lot of like other alternative uses for it. And I think we're kind of in that phase where semaglutides have hit the market and it's picked up a lot of celebrity endorsements and People are more interested in trying it, and it's helping. You know, I think I've heard from a lot of people.
And I think it got this response initially because it is such a visual thing. You know, we can just you can just see the effect. It's just it's all honestly, it's such a short while. I mean, if you've been working out for years versus if you take this drug for a matter of days, it's significant changes. And I think that is what caught everybody's attention. Like, wait, what's going on here?
It's drastic weight loss, right?
Yeah.
So it's
But what do you think? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, I think that's the reason it's popular, right? I have colleagues and connections in other countries who are physicians, and it's not as widely used and prescribed and approved outside of the US, but they would like it to be, you know, because there's a lot of chronic health disease issues that are simply weight related. And so, I think if this is, we can talk about this once we start talking about the issues and maybe the potential concerns about it. Is long-term chronic use good or bad, and what's the negative side effects of that? So I think it's fascinating. I mean, diving into it, I really, especially the last couple months, with all of the political nonsense that's been going off, it's come up quite a bit. GLP-1 has been used as an example for federally funded research, right? And so what's fun is, did you know this originally comes from the anglerfish? It was a peptide that comes from this deep sea fish. So this is why I know that it's been around for, I mean, since the early 80s. They synthesized the peptide. This peptide suppresses appetite, right? And then that kind of went through the rounds. I think there was some shelf life and stability issues with it. And eventually, few years later, they identified the protein in the Gila monster venom. So this is like the little lizard that runs through the Southwest desert. So it bites you, and then it like paralyzes their prey, and then over time they can go back and then get the paralyzer. Like, that's where the semaglutides come from. And so it's
I
been
didn't know
used as
that.
an example of like, we need to fund basic research because now we have one of the most marketable drugs right now. Comes from the saliva of a lizard, right? That I think has been fun. That's cool. To kind of connect those dots and how it originated just out of probably somebody's random curiosity on like
Now, isn't that how everything
some
starts,
postdoc
right?
a swab in the mouth of a lizard. Right. But you know, eventually they figure out it works, and then you know, there's a lot of examples. CRISPR comes from, you know, different cas bases and you know, bacteria that they didn't think about gene editing when they were studying it. They just thought it was a very
Do
interesting mechanism and
you use
phenomenon.
CRISPR in your lab?
We don't. We would probably pay somebody to do it at this point. I think there's a lot of companies out there that can do it pretty cost effectively. We've talked about it quite a bit to get some cell lines. So,
All right, so
but I think it's fun. It's interesting because I think there's two different pathways that this works on. And I think this is where I kind of started really diving and getting interesting. There's the diabetes stuff, which is what it got approved for. So this was like early to mid 2000s. The semaglutides got approved to regulate insulin, right? It basically helps you can control blood sugar and does a great job of doing that. A consequence of that is weight loss. And now there are, I think, so Ozempic is probably the most common one. that is specifically on the market for diabetes. Wegovy is the other one that is specific for weight loss, right?
that.
Yeah, and so that's the one. They're kind of costly. I was kind of trying to do some pricing, and if your insurance covers it, it's still hundreds of dollars a month for this.
But do you have to be like continuous, do you have to continuously take the drug, or is it just like one shot a week and that's it?
Yeah,
But
it's like once a week. I think with these two, the most recent.
like, is there a time that you can wean off the drug, or do you have to be there?
No, yeah, absolutely. So I think that's the benefit of it.
Oh, I see.
And so there's been back and forth in terms of like insurance policies to cover this. And
But how,
so.
I wonder, because when I was reading about the mechanism of action, what I understood was this GLP-1 agonist, right? They work on, or they, I think, increases insulin secretion by affecting on the pancreas cells, right? So I would assume that you need to have a continuous supply of the drug in the system to have a certain amount of functionally available insulin.
Right. So this is great. This is how we can jump into what it does with the brain. Right. Okay. So I think at the moment, talking to people personally who are using some semaglutide. Okay. The semaglutides were, there's multiple generations, so they've been around for 20 years now, but they've gotten better and better. And the reason I think they've taken off is they're easier to use, and you only need to do an injection once a week. Earlier generations, back in like 2010, it was a daily injection because you do
Oh,
need it constantly
wow.
in your system. But this has a pharmacokinetics where it's stable for a lot longer period of time in your body. I've heard, I don't know how verifiable this is, but there's been policy changes from insurance companies to cover it and to not cover it. It costs this much, it doesn't cost this much, depending on what's going on and the availability of it, right? So the companies that make Ozempic and Wegovy ran out of, like, they kind of ran short, and those were very expensive. Generics could come in and corner the market, and that's where I think the popularity came from, because then it became very cost effective to use. Okay. The challenge was that people would go on them for about a year, lose a bunch of weight. There are long-term changes to your body, to your insulin regulation system, to the way your brain perceives food satiety by being on them for long term. You can then wean yourself off and you no longer need them. So there are definitely stories of people being on for a year or two, getting off of it, maintaining the weight loss.
Wow, I didn't know that. I
So
thought
I think that's great,
I do too.
right? That is, I think, how most medications should work. That's how a lot of antidepressants should work, right? You develop the tools to manage the depression effectively without the medication.
But if you think about it, this is such a loss for the pharma companies, though. Like,
I
right?
mean, so many people probably could benefit, that I don't know. So anyways, that's the idea. I think it's to be determined if it's safe for chronic use. I think that's what we're trying to do. So I think that's kind of why it's so popular.
Segueing into the brain, I study, substance use, right? So I read somewhere, like in some newspaper, something like how this GLP-1 agonist and these Wegovy type drugs are also affecting or reducing substance seeking, like meth, cocaine, all that.
Substance seeking.
And
Okay.
I jumped into that rabbit hole because food is like you want to have food, right? Like the whole point of the reward circuit, right? So I looked into, are there any studies? And apparently there are a lot of preclinical studies. That shows if you inject, if you inject GLP-1 agonist to directly to the regions associated with reward circuit like nucleus accumbens or VTA, if you just directly inject it, you have reduced cocaine self-administration.
Oh,
And
okay.
also, if you inject with mice, I think, if you inject, if you give IP injections, like intraperitoneal injections of GLP, it shows that the model has reduced, because with drug, the one of the observation that we see in human and everyone is restlessness, and they just walk around a lot, they increase locomotion. That is cut short with this GLP-1. And not just that, a 2020 study shows that actually, I think there are two, three clinical trials that's going on too, that GLP-1 reduces self-administration of oxycodone. And nicotine too. But then the problem, not the problem, the unknown thing, I think, is which cells express GLP-1 in the brain, where is it expressed, and all the molecular cell, all that remains unknown, and also the sex differences too.
I mean, there, I, you say that, but I think there's actually quite a bit of, because, like I said, they've been studying GLP-1 for a long time.
But I think the
So
studies are just.
there are definitely receptors throughout the brain. So like the nucleus accumbens, right? I think there's a lot in the hypothalamus. And so the hypothalamus is kind of one of these like homeostatic centers of the brain. There are these cells called POMC cells, and these are really good at regulating any kind of drive for homeostasis that involves like intake, right? Water, nutrients, like when you're hungry, when you're thirsty, when you're sleepy, like that's all hypothalamus. That's kind of like its whole function. And so there, these POMC cells, these POMC neurons are all throughout different areas of the hypothalamus that regulate, that help kind of coordinate this satiety, making you feel satiated. And then
Like
there's
the
also this whole dopamine system
mm-hmm.
that they know that the GLP-1s
Oh yeah, new
very, like the VTA,
yeah nucleus accumbens
the
VTA
nucleus
all that.
accumbens all have. And so that's what I'm saying. There's these chronic changes that after a period of time, like they're long-term changes to the brain. These are spine density numbers. These are neuronal structures that are changed over a long period of time that could persist for a long period of time, even without this GLP-1 agonist being administered. I found this one. So this kind of maybe goes into what you're saying about self-administration. And a lot of people say, I mean, there's the whole thing, like you just don't have to eat as much. That's how it works, right? You take this GLP-1, you don't have to eat as much because you're satisfied faster. There's also this growing, I don't know if it's growing, but there's this, I've heard a number of accounts where people say they just don't crave food the same way.
That's the thing. I don't know if it is just food, though, because
I don't think it is. I think it goes into
exactly.
just whatever the neurobiology of craving is. So there's this wild study. I say
Is
wild.
that a good thing or a bad thing? What do you think? I mean, isn't it okay to crave for something? I mean, come on, you.
But I think there's a, yeah, of course. I mean, the craving at the
Want to want things.
hypothalamus means you need water, right? You're thirsty, you're craving water, or salt, or nutrients if you're hungry, right? But there is definitely like, probably like with most substance abuse, low level builds up a tolerance, allows you to take a little bit more, builds up that tolerance, a little bit more, builds up a tolerance. It's the same thing with satiety and feeding, I'm sure. So there's this interesting study. I'd say wild, but that may be a little bit derogatory to the to the scientists. So they did an MRI, functional MRI, where they looked at these reward centers in the brain. And they mapped out, I'm going to show you an unappetizing food, what they call in the study, vegetables.
Oh
And then an appetizing food, quote unquote, pizza. And watch how your brain lights up. And they found that subjects taking semaglutides, when they were presented with the pizza, like their reward centers didn't light up as much. And they interpreted this as that craving is carved because those areas of the brain aren't as active in response to that stimulus. Right. And so if you're thinking about this from a reward presentation mechanism, whether it's cocaine, sugar,
How about?
whatever that reward may be that triggers that dopamine, it does have some sort of system level effect of it.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
My concern with this is, like, in reference to what you were saying, when they didn't find those dopamine regions light up, right? Would this make a person like a shell? Like, what is even the point of being alive if you just don't get the pleasure of, I don't know, a slice of pizza?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a dose specific question, right? I think the idea is you're on a dose. I mean, you still get hungry. It's just
You don't want it as much, is it?
so I'll give you a very personal connection, right? People that I've talked to that have taken that have been on semaglutides, they will go out to dinner and normally you go, let's say you go to a Tex-Mex restaurant and they put a bowl full of chips and queso in front of you. They say they're interested in it, but their brain just isn't like, I need to have this right now. Like it's resistible, right? And so that's how they've described it to me, is talking to them, is that late at night, right? You want to have a little nice little sweet treat, a little piece of candy, some chocolate or a brownie or a cookie or something. It's just not that craving, that drive is not there. It's still, you still get hungry, you still have to eat, right? It just helps balance. It's the insulin control, and then it's also the signaling to the brain that says, maybe you don't need so much.
I hope, I would love to hear from a person who takes these drugs. I want to know what is their motivation to get out of the house. Like motivation itself, like motivation to work, other factors that requires motivation, you know what I mean? Like, is the core value or concept of motivation affected by GLP-1? Because motivation, it's also a behavior, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's
Yeah, I
what.
mean, I think that's more complicated, in the sense that there may be multiple brain areas that are driving that type of.
But this drug goes to all the parts, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one thing that I'm a bit
But
curious
maybe
about.
those types, so maybe even though the. So this drug is acting specifically on these GLP-1 receptors. Right, and these GLP-1 receptors, let's say they promote activity of dopamine neurons, right? Maybe that type of activation is different than other types of motivation and reward activation, even in neurons of that same brain region.
But from what I've understood, I don't know. I was thinking
Because
because.
I haven't read that, like, those are side effects of what's being reported. Nausea,
Yeah, it's all the
overeating.
gastro.
Yeah, GI stuff has been reported, but it's not like, oh, I'm depressed, or oh, I'm not motivated, or oh, I'm, feeling.
I know, but I can't help but to be skeptical about it because if there are like so many clinical trials and studies that show this actually affects like food seeking, drug seeking. Just want to know, and if a person has to be in this for, I mean, before weaning out, let's say 2 1 2 years, a significant amount of time. Just want to know, like how all the drug pharma ads that you get, right? Just want to know what's all going on, I guess.
Yeah, I wonder if it's more like the reward is still there, but maybe with the dose that's being provided, right? That reward sensation is just not as amplified.
And that's the thing, this dose could vary from person to person, sex to sex, gender to gender, all
Yeah, and
that
that's a lot
too.
of when they run those early clinical trials, that's a lot of the things they're trying to.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're at right now is people will report off-target effects, right? If it is, if it affects mood and affect, if it affects cognition and learning and, those are things that will definitely be we'll be finding those out, right?
Oh
Like if there are
yeah, oh, I'm
certain
sure.
populations that are more like if men are more prone to aggressive behavior on Ozempic than women,
Is
whatever.
it, are they?
No, I don't know. I'm just saying. But these are the things like that's what I'm saying. We're in that phase now where more and more people are using it and taking it, and we will find those off-label side effects. Right? Some of them may be good. Maybe you're like, you know what? Not only do I don't eat as much, but I'm not as anxious. Right? My anxiety has been mellowed out for whatever reason. Right? Maybe a little bit of a little dopamine in there helps me chill.
On the same line of thought, not the same line, similarly, this year, usually when I go to gym, first week of January or so, it's crowded, and it usually phases out towards the December. This year in January, the gym was empty. Gym was like freaking empty. It's like, what's happening? Then a friend of mine told, maybe it's because of GLP-1. Like, makes sense. It became last year, no? Last year, the year before, it became a big
Yeah, I
thing.
think it was last year when I first started hearing about it. I mean, I didn't pay attention to it, but I know I started hearing about it. And then it was probably only this year that I was really kind of selectively, and then because we decided to do an episode on it,
Yeah.
I
What
started.
is your personal opinion on it?
I'm interested to see what all it can do. I would be willing to bet it's not a miracle drug.
Yeah.
It appears at the moment to be safe enough for most cases. I would love to see if it had anti-anxiety, anti-depression uses as well. Right? I think when you start modifying insulin and blood sugar, there's a lot of detriment to that, right? Insulin dysregulation and diabetes, like there's a lot of compounding health effects with that cardiovascular, neurological, vascular, right? There's a lot of things
Oh,
that could happen.
absolutely, yeah.
And I mean, just from a public health standpoint, it can help. I mean, if it's safe and it can
See,
help a
if it's
lot of
good enough, it's
people.
good enough, is it?
Yep. We don't know long-term effects. That I think is what we need to be aware of. That was also the question with CBD and cannabidiol, is that we don't know chronic use. We haven't really measured that. Some people really like it. I know this. I've talked to some people who are using it. And I've talked to people who have used it and did not like it at all. It made them
Really?
feel terrible. Yeah. So there's definitely individual responses to it. So.
I know people who've used it and they like the drug because it helps their confidence.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's a very valid reason for that.
I mean, I think there's probably a lot of people that struggle. I mean, I think it became popular for weight loss,
Yes.
right? I think there is a defining benefit to that that's not just aesthetic, but there are also compounding effects of losing weight and feeling better about yourself on overall health and well-being,
Yeah.
right? Confidence, right? That can move you, and if you feel good about yourself and you're confident about yourself,
Oh, absolutely. The world changes.
the world changes for you for sure, right? What do you think?
The same. I think what you think too, same, to be very honest with you. I just think that, like you were saying, there are no drugs that can cure everything, right? And I'm sure GLP-1 also has some harmful effects. Not harmful, that's a strong word, but some not so sugar-coated effects, like every other drugs, like, I don't know, like ibuprofen for that matter.
Oh, yeah.
But what I think in line of GLP-1 is, I can't help but to put GLP-1 in the context of AI, because with AI, with all that, all of a sudden we have this, for the lack of a better word, this new miracle drug that can see, that can basically lead to all the things that we discussed. And I really think in the coming months, there will be a lot of new molecules like these popping up. Like with severe, not severe, with very drastic acute effects, just, like you take it, I don't know, you turn into a blueberry ball like that Willy Wonka girl. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure so many new drugs will come with great acute effects, but we won't know the long-term effects because nobody cares. We don't have time, literally. So I think we are just on the cusp of many drugs like GLP-1. So buckle up, I guess. Which is exciting. I'm excited for that. I think it's a different new way of looking into things too.
Yeah, it's unfortunately how a lot of science works, meaning that like this thing with this took off. Everybody jumps on the bandwagon and applies it to what they're trying to do. It's not a terrible way to answer questions,
I
but it's
agree.
kind of like a,
Is it just how it is?
it is how it is, right? So, for example, could this help with like dementia? Let's just call out, in terms of the neurological world, one of the bigger flags that have been planted and as a major concern, right? Alzheimer's and dementia. Could it be protective against that? So if you're 35 years old, you've been flagged with hypertension, a little bit of a high BMI, obese, not heavy, overweight, but larger than wanted BMI, you qualify for semaglutides at the moment. Say you're on it for 20 years, right? Maybe that regulation and control of insulin helps ward off chronic neurodegenerative disorders. On the other hand, what if it's like birth control, right? Women that are on birth control for long periods of time have higher risk of heart disease, right? Some women who have like PCOS benefit from long-term birth control hormone replacement,
It's a
right?
very, so you're saying it's a very context specific.
I think it is, and I think we only know, so like with using birth control as an example, we only know because now we have data for 40, 50 years of
I agree. Yeah.
different generations of birth control, not the generations of people, but different generations of compounds and how they've worked and Is it a pill? Is it an injection? Is it a implantation? Like, for these types of things, it just takes time, right? But if we never had it on the market to begin with, people that have PCOS may not have had an option, right? If semaglutides were not put on the market for diabetes and then approved for weight loss with Wegovy, if it does turn out that there is like some quote unquote miracle that it like reduces your risk of Alzheimer's, we can't find it out any other way, right? So it's kind of one of these ineffective ways to move science forward, but in some cases, it's kind of the only way we have at the moment.
Continue what you're saying, I mean, first, sorry, when we started this, you said GLP-1 was studied many years before, and it's only now it's been repurposed to treat this. I think maybe that's a way to go because, I mean, for example, Advil, we take Advil for pain reducing fever and all that, and that's what we usually take, but we don't know if we can use Advil. I'm just using an example, Advil in different other contexts, you know what I mean? So maybe the answer is the drugs we have on the market, which has already been FDA approved. So pretty much that time is cut short, pretty much screen for other therapies, other uses, see what. I mean, I'm sure we have years and years of data that shows the safety and efficacy of the drug. So, maybe just do it in a different target, different context. Who knows?
Yeah, and that's how a lot of it's been done
Yeah.
for years now, right? Is get it FDA approved. It can
Many
get
years.
into the hands of doctors and they can start prescribing it. Once they get approved for off-label uses and they start noticing that, hey, my patients respond this way, maybe then, I
Yeah.
mean, maybe that's stimulates more inquiry and during that line of investigation to say, hey, this could be a way to do. I mean, we do that, right? We're like, oh, we need to target this thing. Let's go find an FDA approved drug so that if it does work, we can then frame it as there's one already clinic, there's already one approved on the market, right?
Is CBD FDA approved?
It's approved for Dravet syndrome.
Oh.
So that's how a lot of these, that's how a lot of states have moved toward legalizing CBD.
So it's the same CBD as you get in CBD gummies and all.
In theory, I think there's
Here,
different
yeah, okay, fair.
CBDs, right? I
Fair.
mean, because the THC, I mean, this is a tangent, but THC is the illegal psychoactive substance. And so that's why now you have so many CBD specific products. Right, because before, if you just take medical marijuana, you get THC and CBD, and so then they started developing, isolating,
Yeah,
formulating
isolate somebody.
CBD specific things, and I think that's where they've been able to legally move it. So,
All
but
right.
and I'm sure GLP-1 agonists are gonna. I mean, I don't know if there's like an illicit version of it on the
I
market.
won't be surprised.
People are catching Gila monsters and
People are crazy.
just selling Gila monster venom on the black market. Yeah, I mean, these are all synthetic compounds of the receptor agonist, right? And so they can use that and then make it safe and targeted as much as they want.
Crazy what molecules can do, right? Yeah. Do you have any secret drugs like these that you have in your lab that's going to make you a billionaire overnight?
We've tested a few. Like, there's been a few people that have like, I have this drug, you want to test it? And I'm like, it doesn't do shit.
Organoids.
We had a few. I mean, it may have worked in a different system. It just didn't work at all in our system for what we wanted. So,
It's always a hit or miss with these drug discovery and what is it? Like,
Yeah, and I think that's why
oh.
people hate them. Like, say people, I mean, funding agencies, right? And we need these, we need more, we need better technology to like
Screen.
predict, right? Because there's libraries, like NIH has libraries of compounds. They're like FDA approved compounds that the intent of having them available to the public is for you to repurpose them. Is for
Oh,
you to say, these
really?
have been approved as cancer drugs. We know the mechanism for these cancer molecules. Go and screen, you know,
That.
dystonia models and see if that works, right? There's lots of these available.
Because they're a database then.
Yeah,
Oh,
and
wow.
there's bunches of them. I mean, you can buy like 50,000 compound libraries. So, and they all have some known function, or they have some cluster, like they target this receptor, or they have this type of chemical structure. We can predict that. I mean, that's the idea, is to kind of streamline this. But they've been doing this for a while now, and I'm not sure how effective it is. I think the limitation is like you can get the compounds, but it's just not regular labs can screen 50,000 compounds on any assay, right? I mean, that's the
Even one compound is one person's PhD.
yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, but this is kind of also like classic genetics approaches too, where you take all these things and screen your phenotype, and then that's your project. Compound 12135 gave me the phenotype I'm looking for. Let's go chase it. Right. So I bet that's how they found these compounds. They just took
True, I didn't check
Gila
into
monster venom and then.
it. Gila monster. Okay, I
Any
think
other
that's
final
all I
thoughts?
have.
Do you have any final thoughts on GLP-1?
GLP-1. If I were in a position to use it, I would use it. You know, personal opinion. It's just that, of course, I need to aware of what are the other, like, non-target effects. And I think I should also be aware that the drug is pretty new to treat this. I mean, in this context, right?
Yeah.
So take it with a grain of salt, but do take
I
it,
mean, I think
I
we, our conversation has kind of been focused on like food consumption and weight loss. But in terms of its effectiveness for treating diabetes, especially like type 2 diabetes, it is very remarkably effective, right? It protects these beta cells in the pancreas.
How does it protect it? Like it just prevents it from apoptosis?
So there's just, I think there's this idea that, you know, these cells get run through,
Oh, okay.
right? And it kind of slows them down so that they're not as, they're not just worn out. I mean, I guess that's the most
Fair.
simplified way to do it. It protects them in that kind of sense, right? And just this mechanism that stabilizes blood sugar. So glucagon itself
That's true.
and
That's
insulin,
true. We weren't talking about
it is very
GLP-1.
effective at targeting those cells. And so I think in terms of like long term, I think if you, that is why you're taking it, that is for long term.
What you said, something is correct. We were not talking about GLP-1 in the context of diabetes at all. We were talking about everything else other than diabetes.
But I think that's why it became so popular. Is all of the non, I mean, the side effect of it in taking it with diabetes was rapid weight loss.
Yeah, true.
These two generations of semaglutides were developed because they are way more effective at weight loss,
Yeah.
right? And so I think that's why it became popular, and that's why it became got on our radar, right? But I think in terms of its importance, like people, this will probably be a phase, like CBD, like I don't know, Viagra, if that was a phase. Is that a phase? I don't know.
Everyone uses Viagra.
But it's like, in 10 years, like the hype will be down,
Yeah.
right?
Then it'll be a new GLP-1.
Sure.
Yeah.
But the people that still need it the most, right? The people that need regulation of insulin control through beta islet cells in the pancreas, it's still going to be there to be effective.
Yeah.
Right. And I think those are the ones that we need to kind of keep an eye on, like chronic use. Like, are you demotivated? Are you developing other psychiatric issues because of the chronic dopamine changes? Right. They don't have an option. They can't get off of it necessarily. Versus if you've lost 100 pounds using it and you've modified your lifestyle and you've kind of looked at ways to develop tools and habits that can keep weight loss, and that's your intent and focus, then you can wean yourself off of it. But some people don't have that option. And I think that's important. And I think that's why it's, in my notes I have, is it overhyped? I mean, to some level, no, because that's huge, right? They don't have to take insulin their whole life,
You know what? That is true. Yeah.
right? I mean, insulin has been such an up and down in terms of
Production,
production and cost
manufacturing cost, yes.
and all that stuff. Like this has been a way to alleviate some of that. And I think for public health, that is not overhyped. I think that's a big, big plus. So,
And if you think about that, yeah, that is true.
all right,
Yeah.
we'll see in 10 years if everybody's super skinny. Know.
Lot of new. Anyway, I don't want to be canceled, so just going to keep my mouth shut.
I wonder if it'll change like culinary preferences.
Well, that I think that should be a next podcast episode. GLP-1 and culinary preferences.
Because I think that's like what you were asking about motivation and drive and reward-seeking behavior, right? Does it decrease alcohol consumption? Does it decrease, junk food consumption?
Like, I
Does
wonder.
the unappetizing the
Exactly.
vegetables become
Yeah.
more profiled and highlighted, and then the pizza?
Like, I wonder if a person who's taking this, these class of drugs, I wonder if they have any before and after, especially after the drug, I wonder if they have any preference to, let's say, calorie, high calorie diet, low calorie diet, like rich food, not rich food. Like, I wonder if. If their preference change after the diet, I'll ask. I'll ask. Haven't asked all these. Yeah.
That's
Yeah. That's a good episode.
yeah.
Yep. Yeah, great.
Okay, I'm gonna
Yeah.
stop it.